to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. Get all those little pieces of paper. That is...
Some of my notes. See, I need those.
Nick Wright.
Good morning, Jenna Wolf.
Good
you look
morning.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
This is cheating. No, this is something you can put on your hand, take a test.
Absolutely. Check down. No doubt.
We got a great show for you today. LeBron and the Lakers might be stuck with what they've already got this season. Giannis might be gaining ground on Harden for the MVP, but we got to start with a big night for the Golden State Warriors. Big night on the court and then a memorable press conference off of it. They destroyed the Spurs by 39 points. That turned out to be a footnote to the bigger story. Kevin Durant, his post-game press conference, the first he's agreed to do in 8 days, lasted only 3.5 minutes. It took a turn for the worse when he was peppered with questions about his impending free agency. Take a listen to Kevin Durant.
We've noticed that you hadn't talked for a while. Is it anything to do with anything on your mind, or has it just been coincidence that you haven't talked for some time?
Why do you care?
Because you usually talk.
Well, I feel like talking the last couple of days.
It was anything in particular?
No, I just didn't feel like it.
Anything to do with conversation about free agency?
Yeah, that's the conversation you're going to have. I don't think about that type of stuff. That's your job.
You've obviously been around the noise for so long. Is it bothering you more this year? Is it louder this year?
It's unnecessary. You got to do Ethan Strauss, who come in here and just give his whole opinion on stuff and make it seem like it's coming from me. And he just walk around here, don't talk to nobody, just walk in here and survey and then write something like that. And now y'all piling on me because I don't want to talk to y'all about that. I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man. Grow up. Grow up. Yeah, you grow up. Come on, bro. I come in here and go to work every day. I don't cause no problems. I play the right way. Well, I try to play the right way. I try to be the best player I can be every possession. What's the problem? What am I doing to y'all?
You weren't talking to the media.
So? Who are you? Why do I got to talk to you? Tell me. Is that going to help me do my job better? Nah, bro. I didn't feel like talking.
I mean, how are you playing? How's the team playing in the last couple weeks?
I'm done. You know you don't care about that.
I just asked you.
All right, there's a lot there. See, let me start with you. What was your overall reaction to KD's comments?
Well, I'm not that surprised. But for KD, let me just tell you a few things. There's some language in your contract that tells you that you have media obligations. So part of you doing your job is not practicing your mid-range. It's not practicing your crossover. It's not just that. It's all these other things, too. Like, you have media obligations. There's a reason why we're talking about basketball, NBA basketball, more than any other time in my adult life we're talking about on the national airways. And the reason why is because the type of players that they have, fans are clamoring for more of what they have to say. So that's what they're trying to do, Kevin. Now, I don't know the local media there. I know there's some guys there that have a certain reputation, but that's in every city. But there's a certain obligation as a professional athlete, because I'm a fan of the game. Forget about those guys trying to hate on you. I'm a fan. I need to know more about basketball. And you know the reason why they should talk? Because they know more about basketball than us. And Kevin Durant and those others, LeBron, Steph Curry, they teach me a lot about basketball. So, Kevin, we don't want that part cut out as far as the media. If you want to make all this money, you want to be mega rich, the reason why you're making that money is because the popularity of the NBA. Because I know a day when the money was not like that in the NBA. I know a day when Michael Jordan saved the NBA. My brother was in the NBA at a stretch.
When the finals were on tape delay, and there was none of this discussion. So people need to understand some context here. KD hasn't talked in 9 days, or 8.5 days till yesterday. When did KD stop talking? Oh, right when the noise around KD and the Knicks reached a fever pitch, most notably right after the Porzingis trade, okay? So that's when, because he wasn't being peppered with free agency questions at all because he had made it clear, I'm not talking about that, which was a smart thing. And the only other time all year he's gone this long without talking was after the Draymond kerfluffle, if you will, right? Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, was sort of about this as well.
Absolutely. But the reason he is so mad at Ethan Sherwood Strauss, who covered this team before Kevin Durant got there, who I actually, by the way, I don't know Ethan, and I've had my own little tiffs with Ethan, okay? But he is an outstanding reporter. He used to work for ESPN, was part of the layoffs. The Athletic brought him back. Steph Curry tweeted when he got laid off what an abomination it was. He doesn't just speculate. He reports. What he included in that report is a fact. And that's the second thing that bothered Kevin Durant, which was it has killed KD dating back to 2017 when they won the championship that he did not jump LeBron in the hierarchy. That was in the article. That is what he is talking about. That is what is burning him. So the noise, first of all, on free agency, Kevin Durant was a pending free agent in 2016, and there wasn't this much noise. You know why? Because that season had some intrigue. We didn't know who was going to win. Could the Thunder do it? Mm-hmm. Could LeBron get back there
People
with the Cavs?
People cared about the actual basketball.
One of the devil's bargain with Kevin Durant going to the Warriors has been the intrigue has been removed. The most interesting thing to talk about the NBA is player movement because we know they're going to win as a testament to Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and all those guys' greatness. That's first point. Second point is, and I know this. I am not speculating this. I know this. The biggest reason Kevin Durant went to Golden State was because people around him said and had been telling him since 2013 when he did the Sports Illustrated interview, I'm tired of being second. I was the second pick. I was second in the MVP. I was second in the finals. You're the best player in the world. The only reason you're not considered that is because you don't have a championship. Go get your championship and everyone will say it. And he got his championship in the ideal way possible, beating LeBron, shot in his face, and nobody said it. And then he did it again, and people started wondering, oh, is he even the best player on his own team? And it has killed him. Fair or not, it's killed him. So that's what happened yesterday, was the speculation about the Knicks, which is part and parcel of the league.
Yep. One reason why you get really upset when you're an athlete is when they get close to the truth. Because we can always debate something that's just made up and everything, but something that's really close to the truth. And Kevin Durant, he told the guy to grow up. Kevin Durant should have grown up. How many contracts has he signed? How many times has he been a free agent? Why don't you watch LeBron and some of these others and what they say about free agency? Tell them at the beginning, I will talk when free agency, set a date, July the 1st. I'm not going to discuss it during the race. Then you can't get put in this corner where now you have to continually give people an update because you are a free agent and it is a big story.
Also, the things that he's complaining about, well, let me just do my job and play basketball. The reporters are there for the same reason. The reporters don't want to sit there and get hammered by Kevin Durant. They're there doing their job, asking the right questions.
And it was Jenna. And on the reporter point, the end of that press conference was an utter absurdity. He demanded you only ask me about basketball.
And then when they did, what happened?
He said, you don't actually want to care about this. No, they actually don't. You're correct. But you said that's the only way you're going
to
talk.
But, Nick, they beat the Spurs by 39 points last night. There's really nothing to talk about. They are far and away the best team in the West, the best team in the league. Like, there's no real hardened basketball to talk about. This is what people are talking about.
And when it is a total, to me, lack of self-awareness, when he says, as one of the most famous athletes in America, as a guy who, and more power to him on this front, has been very public about how much he enjoys making as much money as he does, how much money. He told Chris Haynes, when it comes to free agency, where can I make the most money? He and Rich Kleiman, his business manager, are trying to get on mogul status, outside of basketball, enormous money. And that's great. But the reason the NBA is not, with respect, the NHL is not just because the game's more beautiful. It's because we care about the people. It's because of the soap opera aspect. It's because of this part of it. And when we talk about Kevin Durant versus LeBron, there's all the on-court stuff. But see, There's also the off-court stuff, which is LeBron has had one bad public press conference. It was the one after they lost to the Mavs in the NBA Finals, and he basically said, hey, in the morning at least I get to wake up and be LeBron James and you suckers go back to your regular lives. And that has stuck with him a bit. It's 8 years ago. Kevin Durant is not equipped, it would seem, to take on the scrutiny that goes with being the best player in the world.
Yeah, I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I don't think it's fair to KD. I think KD's struggling with some other things. How LeBron does his press conferences and everything, like, LeBron is special in himself. But to try to compare KD, how he's going to represent himself, like, with all the burner accounts and all that, there is no comparison. So I don't think today is the day to compare what LeBron does on the microphone consistently compared to KD. KD just needs to understand that the arc of this league is dependent on its greatest players. He happens to be the second-best player in the world. And to me right now, with LeBron being hurt, LeBron's not the best player in the world. Okay? It's talking about Giannis, KD, Steph, Harden. That's real talk. I watched LeBron play the other night. He is not moving like he was moving in the finals. So KD, should be the time that you should be thinking about. LeBron is begging for help. You're on the best team again. You could control some of this. Like, you don't have to act this way. But you need to realize, though, you should grow up and understand there are certain obligations. When you sign that contract, there's certain obligations, and some of those include the media. We went through this with Marshawn Lynch. I told him, you cannot talk, retire. Oh, he decided to retire. What did he decide to do?
Come back.
And what else was he? He was talking more than ever. He realized his brand could use that. So, KD, this is part of it. They have a job to do, and you have a job to do. And going home and coming back and going home, no, that's not just your job. There's other parts to your job that make the league better and allow you to have the type of success that you have now.
And you make a great point. At this point, right now, his brand could use a good dialogue with the media and open and honest dialogue as well. Take a break. Coming up, talk some football. A Hall of Fame quarterback thinks that Kyler Murray is the next NFL star. That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back. Football, and let's talk some baseball. Let's talk both, because that's exactly what Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray is thinking about these days. He's a big decision to make about his professional future. Will it be the NFL or will it be the MLB? He got a major co-sign yesterday from Hall of Famer Warren Moon, who was speaking to TMZ Sports. Moon was asked if he'd be a great quarterback in the NFL. Take a listen.
The way the game is now, I think you really would. Yeah, the game has changed, and it's right up his alley. They're doing the things that he did in college.
Right.
And because they're doing those things, he'll just transition right into the NFL game.
CeCe, what do you think? Is Warren Moon right about Kyler Murray?
Well, this is the thing. And Warren Moon is like a lot of coaches. And talking to coaches and scouts, they're looking at things different. And it's time for the NFL to start making some changes that the NFL – on Sundays, it's starting to look like football on Saturdays. And if they're going to continue to do that, then some of the positional players are going to look like on Sunday like they do on Saturday. Now, there's a reason why, as an undersized quarterback, you can thrive in college. It has a lot to do with how the hash marks are wider than the NFL. They're at least twice as wide. So the ball is typically placed to the wide side of the field. So if you have the ability to be able to run, you're not put into a phone booth like in the NFL because the ball's in the middle of the field. Also, the rushers. There's better rushers in the NFL, of course, and they're more disciplined. They're more disciplined to make that quarterback stay in the pocket. So with that discipline, height becomes an issue. Average NFL line, average NFL center is 6'2". Average NFL guards, they might be a little bit shorter, but 6'1 is the smallest, up to 6'5. NFL tackles, 6'4 to 6'8. Yeah. Now, you're talking about a guy potentially 5'10, 5'11, trying to throw as hard as it is to throw the football. Like, we've seen great court. I'm talking about big guys, big, strong arms struggle in the NFL. Now, we would think that a guy that is hurt by what he can't see And he's challenged because being in that pocket and being shorter, it does present a different set of challenges. Warren Moon's right, though. The NFL is going to start to because of the play calling. And number one is because they protect the quarterback. You can't land on the quarterback. So a smaller guy, he doesn't have to take the brutal punishment that the older quarterbacks had to, and because the game is more wide open, and because there's more plays that they know they can run right now and that transfer to the league that we didn't have before.
If he'll protect himself, because that's the other part of the quarterbacks that are elite-level athletes, that make sure that you recognize what I got away with in college, I'm not necessarily going to get away with in the pros, and don't look to run immediately. Russell Wilson learned that early and has been brilliant at using his legs when he needs to and avoiding the big hits, because a lot of that protection you're talking about, that is eliminated once they get outside of the pocket, once they become a runner. Like, then they get treated more like a real, not totally like a regular football player, but more so than within the pocket. The question is, does he reach the minimum height threshold, and what is the minimum height threshold in 2019? Mm-hmm. That is, every discussion surrounding Kyler Murray is going to be about how tall he is, because we've seen the tape, we know what his arm is, we know what his athleticism is, we know what his production was, his intangibles, all of those, he checks the boxes. His winning, like, checks all those boxes. Maybe not the experience that would be ideal, mm-hmm. but aside from that, it's not like it's because he couldn't get on the field because he's behind a bum. He's behind Baker Mayfield. It's Drew Brees, or Baker Mayfield 6'1 listed. Drew Brees 6 feet. Russell Wilson's 5'11. Oklahoma says Kyler Murray is 5'9 and 7/8 of an inch. So let's call him 5'10. And I saw a picture of you and he from this weekend.
Yes.
5'10 checks out. So it's 1 inch shorter than the shortest successful quarterback we've ever seen. Is that the minimum threshold, or is Russell Wilson at the minimum threshold? That's the question. Because when C talks about the hash marks, it's everything he mentioned, and with the narrower hash marks, the linemen are also lined up more narrowly, more close together. So you, in college football, sometimes you're not throwing over offensive linemen. Sometimes you're throwing between them. Mm-hmm. In pro football, you're not. So, like, I'm really interested to watch it. I've said this. I like that style of quarterback just aesthetically. I like watching it.
Yeah.
I like that part of college football. So I will hope he is successful. My fear is the same it's been. He's not getting taller. His hair's growing, and that makes him appear to be a bit taller, but he's not getting taller.
So if you're a team, what are you factoring in whether you're going to spend a high draft pick on Kyler Murray?
Well, this is the thing about quarterbacks. They miss on quarterbacks every year. So why wouldn't someone take a chance to miss on someone with height? Like, I mean, do you think Buffalo thinks that they have it in Josh Allen? Or they still have question marks? Now, he's as big as they come. Yeah. Prototype, 6'5", big, strong, good athlete and everything. But is he the future quarterback? So, for me, you're going to miss anyway. Go ahead.
Quick question. As a wide receiver, is there a difference in the way a shorter quarterback throws the ball than the way a taller quarterback throws the ball? Does it only affect the quarterback position, or could it affect other positions?
The only way it affects the wide receiver is on when you're running routes that are shallow, coming across the middle of the field.
You can see.
And the reason why, it's not necessarily being able to see him, it's that the ball is coming out of nowhere. If I'm catching the ball from Troy Aikman, when Troy goes to throw the ball, I can see his hand come up. So this is like pitching in baseball. The sooner you can pick up the laces on a baseball, the better your chance of hitting it. As a wide receiver, the sooner I can pick up the ball or something that looks like, oh, that's coming my way. That's why I don't like the Patty Mahomes no-look pass, because I don't know what's coming. But it's one of those things, the more advantages you give me as far as seeing, and it's more right when you're coming across on those shallow crosses in the quarterback, because if not, the ball's coming out of nowhere.
Right.
So there is an advantage to being taller. Let's not try to make that out to be less than what it is.
Sure.
The more you can see, the more adjustments you can make. Yes, but I think it's very, very intriguing, because we're going to miss in the next 5 years on quarterbacks that are prototypes.
Well, that's, I see.
Why don't we just go ahead and miss on a guy that might be short but has all the other things that you would want?
Your point, like, I think Josh Allen's a great one. Josh Allen checks a bunch of boxes, does not check the production, the winning, the stats. Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray checks all the boxes, does not check the physical ones. And Josh Allen was top 10 pick.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not saying Kyler can be that, but can he be a first-round pick because he's missing the height? I think he probably can be.
It's a good conversation. All right, coming up next, how much trouble are the Lakers in if they do not get Anthony Davis today? That's next on First Things First.
Hey, it's Nick Wright. No one should feel unsafe at home. Period. Fear has no place in a place like home. That's been Simply Safe's mission from day one. We cut out the middleman so you get award-winning protection at fair and honest prices. Simply Safe blankets your entire home with protection. Around-the-clock professional monitoring. Make sure police are on the way when you need them. Alarms that cry wolf? No thanks. Simply Safe's precision-engineered motion sensors detect the unique heat signature of humans, not pets. Simply Safe's glass break sensors are so precise, they can tell the difference between an intruder smashing a window and a plate breaking. The security sensors are so tiny, they blend in with your home so you won't notice them. This is security that is out of sight, but continues to give you a peaceful mind knowing you're protected. As more than 3 million Simply Safe customers already know, it feels good to fear less. So protect your home today. You'll get free shipping on any system order. Just visit simplysafe.com/FTF. That's simplysafe.com/FTF. To protect your home and family today, simplysafe.com/FTF.
On to the latest in the Anthony Davis trade talks. The Lakers are losing hope that the Pelicans will actually make a deal by today's deadline, mainly because they have yet to make a counter to any of the Lakers' offers. Nick, how do you expect the AD trade talks to play out?
Ever since this first came up, I've said all along it's a less than 50% chance Anthony Davis gets traded. As we're now hours from the trade deadline, less than 8 hours from the trade deadline, I say it's a less than 10% chance. It certainly appears the Pelicans, who never wanted Anthony Davis to ask for a trade, appears they never wanted to trade Anthony Davis. And what they were doing was, at best, just acquiring information so they know what the Lakers' offer is this summer when they do intend, I believe, to trade Anthony Davis because they're not going to have much of a choice. And at worst, a little more nefarious, and we can get into that at some point. But I don't think he's getting moved. The Lakers have offered Chris everything they can offer. If you're not going to take all the young guys and salary cap relief and multiple first-round picks, I mean, they're not going to include the Kareem statue. Like, there's nothing left to offer, and they haven't even responded to that offer. That tells me the Pelicans are not interested in making a deal.
Yeah, I don't think the Pelicans are interested in making a deal. Before the season started, they say they're not even taking phone calls with AD. Now, AD and Clutch Sports, they did force the hand of the Pelicans, and if I don't know at what point they came to the realization, but Clutch Sports and AD didn't do the Lakers a problem by only giving them this small window to be able to get the type of deal done, knowing that these other clubs, being Boston, could participate this summer. So it's a tough situation. If I was the Pelicans, I wouldn't be in a rush to trade them. But you know you got to move him this summer if you think that you can get better, because in this, you have to do something to put the Pelicans in a better situation that players that we're not seeing this in 7 or 8 years. If they were able to win the draft lottery, if they had Zion,
right,
could they get a guy to be able to stay there to be their franchise player? I didn't think they ever were trying to trade him, and based on what the Lakers offered, because you know that Boston didn't offer Tatum. So the Lakers really only had the one legitimate offer. I do know that the Knicks, they did offer Kristaps to him, and they turned that down, didn't have an interest in him. But the Lakers, how much real time did they have to try to work out this deal? And you can't make a deal if you don't have – you need two parties.
And when Chris says Boston didn't offer Tatum, obviously Boston can't make a trade right now. But Boston, we know, didn't even say, we guarantee we will offer Tatum in the summer.
Dive in a little bit more, Nick, for us on why the Pelicans would even throw this out there if they were never going to make a deal with Anthony Davis to begin with.
So Brian Windhorst, who's a really, really plugged-in NBA insider, who I actually talked to a couple nights ago about this situation, he believes, and this would be borderline unprecedented. He believes the Pelicans responded to what they thought was Lakers tampering, because the Lakers been dinged for tampering twice now, and they thought this was essentially an Anthony Davis, Rich Paul, Clutch Sports, and Los Angeles Laker coup against their organization by almost reverse tampering the Lakers, meaning letting the talks go on, encouraging the leaks, letting names, okay, so it's Ingram and Kuzma and Zoe who are on the block. Oh, it's and Hart and Zubats and all these guys, letting all of that come in over the last 10 days, pollute the Lakers locker room just to have results like we saw against Indiana. Just to have total, you know what? You're going to create uncertainty within our franchise.
We're going to do the same thing.
We're
going to
do it to you.
Yeah.
And we're going
to
acquire information along the way. We're going to make it seem as if we are engaged in these talks to find out what your actual best offer is. So you have to bring us that actual best offer this summer, even if Tatum isn't available, even if Zion isn't available, even if it looks like this summer you do have some leverage. We will know what you were willing to offer a few months ago, and if it causes some mayhem within your organization, a small market team fighting back against a big market, a team fighting back against player power, all the better.
And CC, it seemed to have caused chaos within the Lakers locker room, the way they've been playing. I mean, if you're a player on the team and your name is constantly being dangled out there to be traded, basically everyone but LeBron, you would have to imagine it would disrupt team chemistry, disrupt the flow, disrupt the success of how a team is gonna be.
I mean, I'd like the Bills say that, but they weren't playing good before the trade rumors started. So they haven't been playing. They didn't play good without LeBron.
Without LeBron, sure, absolutely.
Okay, so where's LeBron. This great stretch where these guys were playing great? No. Ever since, that's the biggest problem here for the Lakers, was LeBron getting hurt. Those 18 games that he missed, 19 games that he missed, because we like the Lakers the way they were progressing. The younger players, even with the injuries. Like, we could recover if Rondo was hurt, as long as LeBron was there. But because of their position, now being out of the playoffs, there's more pressure because LeBron got hurt. If they hadn't, we wouldn't. We thought that this might take till the summer. We just wanted the Lakers to get in the playoffs, be a top four seed, potentially win a series. Those were the questions we were asking ourselves a couple months ago.
Well, that's it.
So what changed?
A couple weeks ago. That's the most interesting part of this is we spend a lot of time speculating about the Lakers, about LeBron. That up until 10 days ago, 11 days ago, last week Monday, nobody was saying if the Lakers don't trade for Anthony Davis this year, it's a failure. We knew it was a possibility, but we were talking about could they get Kawhi this summer? Would they trade for Anthony Davis this summer? The Kyrie stuff came up. Our perspective on it has changed because ever since Rich Paul and Anthony Davis made their public trade request, it's almost made it seem urgent. And then the Lakers playing poorly and falling in the standings has made it feel more urgent. That game against the Pacers has made it feel like it's almost a necessity. But 2 weeks ago, nobody was saying if the Lakers don't trade for Anthony Davis, they're screwed, even though right now that's what it feels like because of the disruption within the team.
And what is that screwed, if you will, look like? Not making the playoffs? What is a ruined season for the Lakers look like if they don't get this?
Let me tell you something. Every day LeBron James plays on the basketball court, he's not playing for a championship. The Lakers and what they're trying to do, that's not the plan. And LeBron is not getting. I don't care what no one says. LeBron's mama, Nick Wright, LeBron James, it's going to come to an end someday. All right? And playing with a non-competitive team right now, because that's who they are. There's no chance they can win a championship. There's at least three teams in the West that would potentially sweep them. So that's the biggest problem. LeBron is aging. And they don't have, forget about two superstars, they don't have that other one superstar. And because LeBron got hurt, it accelerated. Clutch Sports making that announcement, it accelerated everything. But if Magic and Pelinka, if they're not careful, they were on the right path until the injury.
And so your point about not competing for a championship, I think they would have felt okay about knowing, listen, we're not equipped to beat the Warriors this year, had the team been taken where it was on Christmas morning and continued on that. Everything up until the injury. They had seemed to create some continuity. The young players were learning to play with LeBron. LeBron was deferring the first three quarters, taking over in the fourth. And now everything feels different. Now you wonder, are the Lakers going to make almost a panic move at the deadline because they think they have to shake some things up that could restrict their ability this summer to either sign a max guy or trade for Anthony Davis? I wonder if the Pelicans are sitting there saying, oh, well, whatever you offered us today is going to be there July 1st. What if one of those pieces they offered you today, they trade later today because they think they need to change something?
Or the Pelicans are taking a tremendous risk. What if one of those players get hurt? What if one of the players in Boston get hurt?
Sure.
What if Tatum gets nicked?
Right.
What if one of the players at the Lakers get nicked? So they are taking a roll of the dice. I think the Pelicans, they should have waited because then they can get all teams involved. They knew they were limited. They were faced with a time crunch, and all the teams can't participate in the Anthony Davis. If I was them with Boston out there, I wouldn't be in a rush to make a trade with the Lakers.
I agree I wouldn't have been in a rush, but even if it was all subterfuge, once I saw...
What does that mean?
If it was all tricks, if it was all misinformation, that they were never actually going to trade him, that once I saw how desperate the Lakers appeared to be, that I kept asking for more, and they were like, okay, fine. All right, it's two first-round picks and our three young players. All five young players, cap relief, and three first-round picks.
Okay,
the Lakers
fine.
Say, fine to that. Then you do have to have a conversation. Wait, hold on. Is this going to be the best offer we can get that doesn't involve Jason Tatum? And then the real discussion of what are the odds Jason Tatum is ever actually offered?
Right.
Like, those are discussions that I think the Pelicans would be having.
Well, if Jason Tatum's never offered, you really only got one suitor to make a trade. That's with the Lakers.
Right. Assuming the Knicks don't win the lottery, which is when the power could shift back to the Lakers, which is the only gamble the Pelicans are taking in this. Otherwise, they're saying, we'll just wait till the summer.
Okay, so here's a question. Here's something we haven't talked about. The trade deadline is 3 p.m. Eastern today. Do you think there's a dark horse out there, another team that could sweep in for Anthony Davis at this point?
I think there are a couple teams that are going to call him. I'm sure the Rockets are going to call him and offer him the same thing they offered for Jimmy Butler. Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, and all the first-round picks. I don't think that gets it done. The Raptors I've been talking about throughout. I think the Raptors offering Siakam, OG Anunoby, Jonas Valanciunas, and some picks, knowing, hey, if we don't win the title this year and Kawhi leaves, we can trade Anthony Davis ourselves maybe for Jason
Tatum.
But would
the Pelicans make that deal?
That one, I don't think so. The one that I think is the best offer they could get, that if he's traded today and it's not to the Lakers, watch out for the Nuggets. Jamal Murray, I believe, is the exact same caliber player Jason Tatum. Michael Porter Jr. was a lottery pick out of Missouri who hasn't played because of a back injury. He was a projected top five pick before the back injury. And they have the salary space to make it work if they trade Miles Plumlee. And that team is right now second in the West. That team thinks maybe we can win a championship. If he's traded and it's not to the Lakers, watch the Denver Nuggets saying, you know what, we'll go for it this year. And then we'll move him ourselves this summer and recoup a lot of our investment.
Wouldn't that be something if he ended up not going to the Raptors?
Nobody saw Kawhi going to the Raptors.
You're right. No,
people didn't see Paul George going to OKC.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, Kevin Durant finally met with the media last night and things got spicy. That's next on First Things First. Time for your Subway Choice moment. Yesterday, the folks over at Pro Football Focus named Saquon Barkley the 27th best player this past season. They also named Odell Beckham the 36th best player. Despite these two great offensive weapons, the Giants missed the playoffs for the second straight year. All right, CC, let's talk a little football. What's the key to the Giants bouncing back now next season?
Yeah, for one, a lot of people are going to be shocked we're talking the Giants. I'm shocked we're talking the Giants.
I know, you have to like look at the, you're like, we, this is the.
I mean, the last couple of years it's been about, is Eli Manning, is he washed up? Last year, free agency, they signed Nate Solder, spent a lot of money. A lot of people thought their offensive line woes were going to be over with, and they realized that, man, you have to spend a lot more money on your offensive line to be able to put your offensive line together. The Giants right now are about star players. They don't have a bunch of glue guys. And the Giants, when they've been good, they've had a bunch of guys. Not necessarily their highest paid guys, but they had a bunch of guys that knew what they were supposed to do. Right now, the Giants, they are a team without an identity. They're a throwing team. They're a running team. What kind of team are they? Can they rush the passer? Like, they spent a lot of money on free agents on the defensive side that haven't panned out. So who are the New York Football Giants? They need to, this offseason, through Pat Shurmur, find a type of identity, find a style for which they want to play. And for me, it should go through Barkley. Barkley is a special, special running back. He has the type of speed and the type of girth that I believe the durability. Like, not going to be a problem with him. I worried about that with the Penn State running backs because he wasn't a 25-carry-a guy in college, but he showed me within that first rookie season, immediately, he can be that type of guy. He avoids a lot of big hits. He showed that he was very, very durable. He talks about being a leader. He talks about changing the Giants and how people look at the Giants. So to me, whatever their identity is going to be, it should be surrounding their tailback because he's a special football player.
See, can he be the leader of the team in year two? Because I was so impressed. I've been impressed by watching him on the field. When we talked to him last week, I could see why you would have no concerns about drafting him as high as they did, no concerns about money or fame. He seemed so polished and just impressive as for anyone in their 20s, much less in their very early 20s. For a team whose leader obviously has been Eli for years and years, but Eli is on his way out, probably his last year within the organization, can he be the leader?
Well, this is the thing. Inside the NFL locker room, you need a number of leaders. A basketball team, you can have one or two leaders. But a football team, you need a bunch of leaders. It's no different than Ezekiel Elliott, what he did in Dallas, immediate impact, and he had leadership ability. Todd Gurley's a different guy. He's more of an introvert. But I believe that Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott, their ability to play at a high level, and Barkley, what he does, I believe he's a force multiplier. When you're around him, he's a different guy. When you talk to him, his conversation's different. He has a certain maturity about him. He has a certain direction about him. He has a certain authority when he says things. You know that when you ask him a question, he thinks about it before he responds. Those are things, and we saw that. We had him on the show Super Bowl week. So those are the things that, yes, it's natural. People say, yeah, I want to follow that guy because how he goes about being a professional.
Nick, the consensus coming into this past season was the Giants were going to compete. They had the pieces. We weren't sure we were getting Eli Manning, but they had the wide receiver. They had the running back. They had some semblance of a defense. What was the reason why they didn't?
Well, I know we focus on Eli and we focus on how often he was sacked. But the reality is there were a dozen quarterbacks in the league sacked on a higher percentage than Eli Manning. The Giants' offense was the definition of average, 16th in points, 17th in yards. They were middle of the pack. So why are they drafting in the top six? Because their defense, where a lot of their money is spent, was bad. Their defense was 23rd in points, 24th in yards, 30th in sacks of the opposing quarterback. That defense, they were not getting their money's worth out of them. Now, the offense didn't play like a Super Bowl caliber offense. The offense played like an 8-8, 9-7 team.
Yeah, the other wide receiver and the tight end, they didn't make that big bump in year two like we thought.
Right, absolutely.
I told you I was concerned about all Oklahoma wide receivers.
Right, and you were the Evan Engram, I thought, finally, at least different times, their tight end flashed the potential he had. And you were right about Sterling Shepard, like that he has not taken the leap that I expected and that I think a lot of people expected. But that's not why they won five games. They won five games because the defense was really poor, especially given the money, and they were awful in close games. This was a team that was, at the end of the year, they had back-to-back games. They lost by, I think, 1 point and then 2 points. They could not close out. They had a number of games where it looked like through the first half, they're in control of this game. They went on to lose. So the inability to close out games and the defense could not get a stop at any point. That's why they weren't at least 8-8. Now, to get to the playoffs, to get to what we're talking about, Solder's got to play better. That second-round pick, Will Hernandez, he's got to be better in year two. Odell's got to play 16 games or at least close to it. And Saquon's got to stay at that level. That's without mentioning where Eli is at this point in his career.
All right, we'll take a turn on the other side. We are less than 8 hours away from the NBA trade deadline. Coming up next, should the Celtics break up their young core to bring Anthony Davis to Boston? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, look who's back. Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix. Didn't get enough yesterday. He's back here.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Did you get a haircut yesterday?
I did not.
Your hair looks nice,
trim,
though.
Yeah, a little different gel.
Oh, okay, okay. You know. It looks nice.
You know what it looks better than?
It's not
than?
Flammable, is it? Because I'm getting ready to throw
some. It's like the calm before the storm over here. It's like,
you know what it looks better than? When you had to shave your head because the Cavs made the final
flush. Oh, sure. Okay. That sucks. Here we go. On to the latest on Anthony Davis. While most of the talks are centered around the Lakers, don't count out the Celtics. It is being reported that while Boston refuses to promise New Orleans a specific trade package for AD, they do insist that no player is off limits. So, Chris Mannix, do you think the Celtics should break up their young core this summer to bring AD to Boston?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. And Nick, you did. You were excellent yesterday with the graphic, and I appreciate that.
I played a little trick on you. A little blind reveal. It's one of my favorite
things. As we're looking at what the Celtics should give up, I feel like we should toss that graphic up
again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And take,
what's
and
good
take
for the goose is good for the gander.
So here are the numbers you
You're
tossed
learning.
Up.
Do some producing. Yeah. Let's go, man.
Well, here are the numbers you tossed up yesterday. Well, that makes some sense. Look, Jaylen Brown, not so good.
Those are the season averages.
Season
of those
averages.
Four
now, what we didn't throw up there were minutes, which I think is a big factor in all this. Let's toss up the per 36-minute averages, which a lot of NBA teams look at mm-hmm. as being a reasonable statistic
sure.
to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes Jaylen Brown, because he's, what is he playing, 25, 26 minutes a game?
Per 36 minutes averages, that's pretty close. Better rebounding numbers, comparable numbers across the board. Only Kyle Kuzma is a few points better. That makes those guys look like kind of the same type of player, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, which is, hold on, can we put that back if we could? Because I didn't know that was coming, but I enjoy this type of game. So if those are the per 36 numbers, you're right, it makes Jaylen Brown look way better than the per game numbers. But explain to me again why Jason Tatum's the best piece by far, why Jason Tatum's the blue chipper that is head and shoulders better than Ingram and Kuzma. Because if we're normalizing for numbers, for minutes, and their shooting percentage is about the same, explain that one to me.
The explain it is because typically the stats on teams that are losing more games are a little more inflated, and people in the NBA world, I know my brother called me yesterday, talking about, listen, man, when teams are losing games, you have to deflate them numbers that are guys that are playing on winning teams. So for your argument, that part is true. Where Boston is right now, you make a legitimate argument.
The numbers are more valuable
but
on a winning team.
You're not
no
even
doubt.
Really debating that Tatum is the top guy in that.
Like, no,
you're not. What you were debating was Jaylen Brown, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo.
Listen, Tatum, I believe, of those four players, and if we wanted to include Lonzo, but we don't need to, Tatum is the most valuable piece. What I am saying is if you want to go to just per 36-minute numbers to try to push – I don't understand the need to push up Jaylen Brown. What did the NBA world think when he was drafted third overall? Oh, that's a bit of a reach for an athletic defender. What was the book on him after year one? Oh, you know what? If he develops a jump shot, he could be better than we thought. And there was a time period last year where the Celtics were so injured that he was thrust into their, I would say, third option role, Tatum, Horford, Jaylen Brown, and he met the challenge for 4 weeks. And then he went back to being the guy we thought he was, an athletic defender who's going to be offensively challenged. I don't know why there's a need to act as if Jason Tatum's not in the trade, the Celtics have a great trade of players. They have a great trade of picks to offer if that's what New Orleans wants. But we can't act like Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and Daniel Theis is a great haul of players. Now, picks I'll listen to. I just don't think Jaylen Brown is one of the, I don't know, with respect to Bill Simmons, 75 most valuable trade pieces in the NBA. And that's, to me, what my eyes tell me and what the numbers tell me.
Look, I think he has a higher upside than Kuzma. I think he has a higher upside than Ball. I think offensively he's better than you give him credit for. I think he struggled this season, but if you look at the numbers in January when he started to figure it out, he's been considerably better. Now, you asked the question about what should the Celtics do? How deep should they go? I think there are two philosophies. If this goes by, and I think it's going to go by the trade deadline with Anthony Davis still in the Pelicans, there are two positions the Celtics have to take. One, if they believe, and they'll spend the next 3 months figuring this out, if they believe that Kyrie Irving is back and that Anthony Davis will ensure that Kyrie stays and that Kyrie staying will ensure Anthony Davis is going to be there, it's a Jason Tatum-centric package.
Absolutely.
If they have to, they won't start with that, but if they have to, they put that chip on the table and they make that deal. The flip side of it, though, is that if Kyrie's, like, gone, if they decide, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if Kyrie says, I'm going somewhere else, then I think you pull kind of all the way back and you go back to that team that you saw at the end of last year. You keep Terry Rozier around long term and you build around Tatum, Brown, keep Gordon Hayward around and build that way. I mean, that is probably the two ways you're going to go. The more likely remains.
That doesn't sound real exciting.
I went to a conference finals.
Wait a second. Sorry.
So you're saying we're going to go in this era where Danny Ainge had all these picks. They go out and get Gordon Hayward. They trade for Kyrie. And now we're saying in 2019-20, Who's the team? Say that again.
Well, that's the
Tatum.
You're asking for situations. The backup plan is that. That's not the first plan. The first plan is, and the plan that they believe is right. going to
it's
work.
Kyrie and AD.
Is Kyrie and AD. They believe that's going to work. But if this all self-destructs, which some people, like you, think is going to happen, that's
and all it plan. Takes for it to self-destruct so, is Kyrie leaving. All it takes is one of the more, let's call it, unique players in the league. But this is, man, I wish I could put my tweet on the screen. I tweeted this 3 days ago, and now it's happening in real time. I cannot wait for Anthony Davis, Kyrie, Gordon Hayward is going to be the best big three in the league to transition seamlessly to. Tatum's going to be an MVP. Jaylen Brown's wicked underrated, and we still got Marcus Smart.
Educated Blake's going to say that though. Like that, it would be.
I feel like that's what you just said.
No, you asked. I was asked the question. I was like, here's the backup plan.
And then build around him.
You take all these draft picks and then try to deal it for somebody else down the line. You still put yourself in a position. It's not. Look, if that happens,
nobody
should be saying.
We didn't have a show 2 years ago, but wasn't that the theory?
What?
Oh, we're going to save all these picks and trade for a big star down the road. Now we're getting ready to sell that to the Celtics fans again?
No, this is the big star. Anthony Davis is the big star. But
and Kyrie was
apart,
the big star.
And they got Kyrie Irving. So it has worked a couple of times. And they've built the team to this point. Look, this was just the backup plan. And I don't think anybody would say that it's not a failure. It's a failure if they don't get Anthony Davis and Kyrie walks away. It's just that's what they'd probably turn to.
They're not barren of assets.
No, I understand that part of it.
So all of this is predicated on Kyrie staying. Are they going to spend the next couple months just focused on that? Because that brings AD in, and that maybe guarantees AD stays longer than a year.
It's a weird dynamic to be in because, yes, the front office is going to do that, but they know that how the season ends is going to have a big impact on that. If they get beat in the first round by somebody, that's not going to be a good thing. If they go to the NBA Finals, I don't know that Kyrie Irving walks away from that either. So
you say the first round, I think everyone, even though I'm lower on the Celtics than most, now that the Pacers don't have Oladipo, there's four real legitimate contenders out east. They're going to end up the top four seeds. So yes. I don't think anyone thinks a first round exit's possible. But that second round of the East is going to be monstrous for everybody. Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, and Philly, they're going to be playing each other. And so a second-round exit for any of those teams is on the board. But can I circle back to something you said earlier, which really surprised me? You said that even if Kyrie's there, that you don't think the Celtics will start with Jason Tatum being available. Why not? And Danny Ainge, I know he's full of confidence, but there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. I got to learn that every day myself. Like, what in the world makes Danny Ainge believe he has any reason to call up New Orleans and make an offer that doesn't include Jason Tatum?
For the same reason the Lakers didn't go all in on their first round of offers. You don't do it right away. I mean, look, they know that it may ultimately cost them Jason Tatum, but I think they'd like to explore
first. So are you
first.
Of the theory there's a deal done without Jason Tatum? Forget about Boston right now.
No, I don't think, no. Okay. I personally don't think.
Well, let's talk about that then, because you're not getting Anthony Davis without Tatum. Like, regardless of the art of negotiating, like, that's not going to happen because that's not a better deal than what the Lakers offered.
And I think that if the – and
I think that's up for debate, but
–
It's not up for debate that the Celtics can offer a same package without Jason Tatum than the Lakers can?
Their draft picks are considerably better.
It's only on – if the Pelicans – if they change what they've said – which is they want an all-star caliber player, and they transition to, we want the best picks possible, then sure. If the Pelicans are saying what we want is the 2021 Grizzlies pick, and we want those picks, fine. Well, but that's not what they've been saying.
What about the little wrinkle of, we'd like to stick it to the Lakers? Maybe this isn't the best deal we'll get from the Celtics, but can you imagine if AD ends up with Boston and not with the Lakers, which is a little bit of what Brian Windhorst was sort of saying, that right now they've sort of dangled this idea of maybe trading.
If I was the Pelicans, I wouldn't be concerned about maneuvering around the Lakers. I'd be more concerned about a couple years, am I going to be in Seattle?
Just quick.
That's what I would be.
They got to make the best deal.
Exactly. Look, just to be clear about what I think the Celtics would do is that they would start with a deep pick-centric package, probably Jaylen Brown. And then if it goes to Tatum, I think they'll turn around and say, okay, but we got to take some of these picks out of it. It's a negotiation. Like, there'd be two separate offers, and they'd want to retain some of their draft assets if they're putting the top player in this mix.
And when they don't get him, we're going to hear by somebody that works for the Boston Herald, oh, my God, Danny Ainge made the greatest offer, and he just barely missed out. Like we heard on every trade up until Kyrie Irving.
Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, LeBron calls out the Mavericks for trading Harrison Barnes in the middle of a game. That's next on First Things First. We will get to LeBron in a second, but first, a couple of highlights from last night. Nets and Nuggets and Shabazz Napier with the nasty Euro step, dropping the dime to Damari Carroll for the layup.
Oh, D'Angelo Russell's happy about this. That's LeBron's guy. Oh, draft this guy.
Man,
he's going to get some people fired as a general manager.
And check out D'Angelo Russell's renaissance as a great teammate now that he's a Net.
Bucks and Wizards, Giannis getting a steal.
He's a good teammate with the Lakers.
Coast to coast before dropping the hammer here. Giannis had 43 points last night.
It is a pleasure to watch him each and every night he plays, does stuff that no one else in the league can do on a team with the best record in the league. And, I mean,
that's one dribble.
Dangerous now.
Past half court.
I know.
One
Rockets
dribble, about eight
Kings,
steps.
Buddy Hield.
Ooh, eat that.
Thinks he's got a layup, but Kenneth Faried spikes it away.
Kenneth Faried, one of those midseason pickups by my pal Daryl Morey. Now, Buddy is having a spectacular season, shooting 46% from three. But Faried says, no, don't need to come in here, little fella.
Faried's been a huge part of Houston, even though we talk about Harden, how they run their offense. He's been a pleasant surprise.
Mavs and Hornets, Luka. Come on.
Breaks LeBron's record, youngest player ever with his third career triple-double. And this right there, the degree of difficulty on that while getting fouled, come on now.
I had you on a LeBron shot clock. I was wondering how many minutes you were going to make it. I like putting the timer on my partners and everything.
I know, but that was, he broke the record. Am I just supposed to say he broke the record? I think it's more impactful to say whose record he broke.
Yeah, he broke the rookie record of some guy.
It's not the rookie record. It's the age record, which is why I had to include who it was.
Okay.
The NBA trade deadline is at 3 p.m. today. Some teams have already made their moves. The Mavs traded Harrison Barnes to the Kings when? Oh, in the middle of the game last night. LeBron posted about this on Instagram. He said, all right, so let me guess. This is cool because they had to do what was best for the franchise, right? Traded this man while he was literally playing in the game and had zero idea. I'm not knocking who traded him because it's a business and you have to do what you feel what's best. But I just want this narrative to start to get real and change, and not when a player wants to be traded or leaves a franchise that he's selfish and ungrateful player. But when they trade you, release, waive, cut, etc., it's best for them. I'm okay with both, honestly, truly am. Just call a spade a spade. All right, CeCe, what do you think about how this all went down with Barnes last night?
Well, for one, trying to think that the owners and the players are going to ever be on the same level ground, that will never happen. One owns the organization, everybody works for him. And to think that athletes would be on, or that fans would support or understand what athletes go through, that's never going to happen. So it's unrealistic, LeBron, to think that a player asking for a trade and an owner trading you, that it would be perceived to ever be the same. It will never be that way. People will never understand athletes and the benefits of being an athlete. And the public, they shouldn't feel sorry for them. Because if you consider that to be a negative, that you can be traded in the middle of a basketball game, it's only basketball. It's not like he's fighting some bull in some ring. He's got to be mentally, like, that's no big deal. Like, okay. Basketball, he's going to be on another team tomorrow and everything. But all his money and everything is guaranteed. So it will never be call a spade a spade. It will never be that. And as an athlete, he shouldn't think that it will ever be the same.
Why do you think fans would relate more to ownership than to players when the vast majority of fans don't own their own business?
It has nothing to do with relatability. It's just that they're not going to feel sorry for the athlete. It's not as if they encourage the owner. Is what they realize is everyone owns something. Like, you might not like burgers a certain way, but if you go to McDonald's, guess how you getting them? You getting it the Golden Arches way. And if you're in the basketball business or in the sports business, they run their team. It's not as if fans side with the owners. It's just that they don't have any empathy for professional athletes.
So I think the last part of LeBron's statement is the most important part. And the only way he doesn't come across as wildly hypocritical is because he says, I'm fine with it as long as we recognize it goes both ways. I think LeBron's big issue is a similar issue that I've had, most notably in the NFL. When a player holds out in the NFL, the media kills him. The fans kill him. And when a player under contract gets cut in the NFL, we say that's business. And I find that to be so divergent. Like, they're both business. And it's very rare that a player has leverage. Darrell Revis did. He exerted maximum leverage, got killed for it. But when a guy, Troy Brown, who we talked about a lot last week and this week.
Wait, let's go back to Darrell Revis. Mm-hmm. You said that he got killed for doing that.
Yeah.
You mean he got criticized?
Yeah, that's by the media. Yes, by the media and by the fans, he was
criticized.
Okay,
but how did it hurt Darrell Revis's career? Because he's one of the most popular guys that's ever played. People have a lot of respect for him. He was very, very smart about it, played at a high level, is going to be a Hall of Famer, made a lot of money, won Super Bowls. How did it affect him?
Listen, I'm not saying that it was a career-ending
situation. Oh, so it didn't kill him, literally.
Well, obviously not literally. He's still with us. My point is, he was... what I don't remember hearing, to bring the Troy Brown point, Troy Brown helped the Patriots win a Super Bowl, gave up reachable incentives as a receiver to help them play corner. That offseason, when he's under contract, they bring him in. We want you back next year. But your contract's not guaranteed. We think you're a little overpaid. So we're going to cut you and then re-sign you for $1 million less. That is considered savvy business. Nobody got on TV and said, the Patriots need to honor the contract. When Harrison Barnes is traded within a game, forget Harrison Barnes, Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin, when they do a whole presentation, we're going to hang your jersey in the rafters, we're going to do this, we're going to build a team around you. And he decides, I'm going to sign here, commit here, build my life here. And 3 months later, they trade you from Los Angeles to Detroit. The commentary is, wow. That's savvy by Jerry West, Doc Rivers, and Steve Ballmer. Get off that contract. But when a player like Anthony Davis demands a trade, they get criticized. That's what LeBron's talking about.
I also think a lot of fans have issues with how much money these players make. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not saying I agree with it. But they take offense almost at how much money they make.
Yeah, they don't take offense to other businesses. Lee Iacocca, I remember they went bankrupt. Lee Iacocca made $100 million. They didn't say nothing about that. Now, that to me, that's more of a social thing. People hating on people making money. It's people making money in all kinds of other businesses.
Well, and
they don't say anything about that.
Well, but that's also, that gets at the root of, I believe, what LeBron's talking about, what I'm talking about, which is the money, if the players weren't making it, the pie is this big. The players right now in the NBA get half of it. Okay, let's say they got 40% of it. The other 10%, we're not getting a rebate. It goes to the owners. And the owners are billionaires, not millionaires.
Yeah, I don't expect, as an athlete, I don't expect fans to ever understand. I don't expect them to understand my life. I don't expect them to understand what we're going through. And I don't expect fans, just because they come to the game, to side with athletes on labor issues. Like, that's just not the way it is. Most fans are very envious and jealous of athletes. So immediately when these things come up, that's when you see the jealousy and the envy. But I guarantee if you asked them, man, would you love being a basketball player? Absolutely. But will they criticize an athlete when he decides to be traded? Absolutely. That's part of being an athlete. There's certain benefits that we're going to get that other people aren't going to get.
And the question,
I don't complain about that. I don't complain when I go to a 5-star restaurant and they don't have a table and I sit down. Then now the other things, the backlash that I'm going to get as an athlete, like, I can't have everything.
No, of course. There's obviously so far more benefits to being a professional athlete than not being a professional athlete. I think this is a specific thing about how fans and the media react to the transaction. I just want to ask you this. We obviously have changed a lot culturally in how we cover the games, the way we talk about athletes. Do you think... It sounds like you think that this is just how it will always be, that fans will always lean to siding towards with the team and with management.
Yeah, why should they side with the players? Why would they ever side with the players? Why would they be understanding of the players? I don't ever expect that.
I feel like the fans got more in common with the players than the owners. The fans.
Well, it's not a matter of commonality. They ain't got nothing in common with either one of them, to tell you the truth.
Okay. All right, let's break there. Coming up, who should LeBron pick first tonight in the All-Star Draft? That's next on First Things First. Hey, last night, Giannis dropped 43 and went 17 for 21 from the field, and James Harden scored 36 for the Rockets. It was his 28th straight game with at least 30 points. These two have been neck and neck in the MVP race all season, but James Harden is the betting favorite. Nick, can Giannis overtake Harden for MVP?
It's absolutely on the board. Right now, he's, to me, it's a two-person race with respect to Paul George, who's having an outstanding season. Mm-hmm. These two have separated themselves, and really, Harden, for what we thought was an amazing 15-game stretch, it's now on a 28-game stretch. That's more than a third of the season. He has separated himself from Giannis. But there are some benchmarks Giannis can get to that, I mean, he's averaging 12.5 rebounds. If he gets 27, which is where he's at, 13-6, which is right around where he is, and the team gets 62 wins, gets in the low 60s, then people are going to start looking at it, and I think people will be biased towards Giannis C, not only because Harden has won one, but Giannis plays maybe the single most aesthetically pleasing style of basketball in the NBA,
opposite.
While Harden is on the other end of the spectrum.
Well, Giannis, if you like traveling, if you like a guy to take 8 steps and everything aesthetically, if that's pleasing to your eyes, then I could see why that would swing you. I believe that the wins is the most important thing. And I believe that's the only way that Giannis is going to be able to top Harden. Because what we've seen from Harden, we have never seen before. And if he's able to continue that for over the next 2 months, he is the MVP. Giannis, what he's got to do is they got to have the best record. All right, right now at 40-13, if they can finish with the best record, that's something that's always been a part of who the MVP is. Well, who's the best player on the best team? And for them to have the best record in the NBA, because that was not expected, we expected Giannis to grow his game. But that part right there, I believe that's the only way he's going to be able to rival what Harden has done on the court.
And I totally agree, by the way. If Harden keeps, if this streak continues through the rest of the season or continues with one game missing, then Harden's going to win the MVP. I believe at some point, I mean, he's averaged 42 a night since December 13th. At some point, I think he's going to come down to
and
earth.
If there is a sentimental favorite, you lean towards Giannis, I think it should be to Harden because he's been robbed of a couple other MVPs.
Yeah.
So, like, if he's playing to this level, you really need to knock him off that crown. So, for me, it's Harden.
Let me ask you real quick, C. Do you think the Rockets, you talked about if the Bucks have the best record. Is there, historically, you need 50 wins to win MVP, except for the Russell Westbrook year. Do you think the Rockets, they would have to go, I think, 18-10 the rest of the way to get there. Do you think they have to get to 50 games, or after what Russ did, winning it on non-50-win team, that is no longer a prerequisite?
Well, I think he's in that class of Russ, because what he's doing, we've never been able to see that before, and I think it will hold up on its own. But it's different when you're going against a team in Milwaukee and Giannis that was not expected. I mean, that was not expected. They don't have the best talent in the league, so you'd have to recognize his ability to raise his club to being the best in the NBA.
All right, let's move on to Kevin Durant now and the latest reason that he's fired up at the media. Apparently, it's not just about his impending free agency. The Athletic is reporting that Durant thought he'd be seen as a better player than LeBron after winning the 2017 Finals. And that hasn't been the case. And that doesn't sit well with Kevin Durant. So, Nick, what do you think has to happen for KD to be considered better than LeBron James?
We're talking in the here and now, like the best player in the league, not like all-time rankings. In the here and now, it's on the board for a bunch of guys, and Kevin Durant's one of them, to at the end of the year for the general consensus be, you know what? They've overtaken LeBron. It was on the board a few years ago for Steph Curry to do it. And then the NBA Finals happened. Last year, with the Cavs struggling the way they did, if the Cavs had lost in the first round to the Pacers like they almost did, I think that conversation would have really started. The reason that LeBron's been able to hold guys off, and Kevin Durant in particular, is because the playoffs, every year, LeBron raises his game to a level a couple grades above everyone else. And Kevin Durant, while he won Finals MVP, during the NBA playoffs, when they were falling down 3-2 to the Rockets, remember, he didn't take the one game-winning shot. He had another chance again, didn't take it there. Even up to the game one of the finals on the JR play, he got pushed out of the way. JR gets the rebound. Like, his play was more hot and cold until the final three games of those finals. So what would he have to do? If the Lakers miss the playoffs, that is obviously a huge help to him. But even if they make the playoffs, they have an early exit. If he is spectacular, start to finish in the postseason, and they win a championship, and LeBron's not playing the final 6 weeks of the year, which hasn't happened in nine years,
right.
That, to me, is what would have to happen for the consensus to change in his direction.
Well, I think the conversation started when LeBron got hurt. And that conversation created more intensity, or the conversation got more intense the longer that injury went on. And LeBron being back now, when I saw Steph Curry come back, Steph Curry came back healthy. LeBron James is still not 100%. And typically in the NBA, guys don't come back till they're 100. He is not 100% in those two outings that we've been able to see him. So in watching the NBA, right now, if you're being honest,
yeah,
LeBron James is not the best player, all right, because he's not 100%. But based on last year's NBA Finals and what happens to this year's NBA Finals, because I believe it's going to be on the board, Giannis, Harden, and whoever, Steph Curry and or Durant. All those players should be, we should be conversating with who is the best player in the NBA right now. Not 18, not 17, right now. And I believe that conversation will be open for a real discussion for the first time. Kevin Durant's biggest problem was when he left OKC, he put himself on the Warriors. So trying to evaluate the best player in the world, because you can't compare their stats. How they, what they do on the court, having Steph, having Klay and KD, like, there's no comparison to what LeBron was doing. So it was crystal clear that it was still LeBron, even with the finals, how LeBron played against in that lopsided matchup and how he fared against them.
And the other thing that hurts Kevin Durant is there is, and I don't think this is haters, I don't think this is media critics, there's a real conversation about, is KD better than Steph? There's a real conversation about, is KD the best player? Is he the second best player in the world or the second best player on his own team? I think this year, Steph has played at a higher level. Now, KD obviously has been the better player in the NBA Finals, and we can, there's a lot of machinations there. But that's the other part of it, is LeBron, there's never been a question who the best player on his team is. That's one of the other things KD forfeited for the chance to go win these rings, and Steph did as well. Steph was knocking on the corner of best player. He'd won two straight MVPs. They'd been to two straight finals of best player in the world. When those two came together, it's so hard to separate them and figure out how much easier is one guy's job. Who's the guy? Like, all those things make it a more difficult conversation for them.
What if Kevin Durant comes to New York and he wins here? How much does that boost his legacy?
That's what it is. We're going to measure on this season, and then from the finals on, next year it's going to be wide open. AD's going to be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Kyrie potentially could be somewhere else. LeBron's trying to get him some help.
Harden could have a second straight MVP.
Kawhi is going to be somewhere else. So next year it will be on the board who's the best player, and KD will be a part of that discussion. Him getting his own team, it does help, but it is not the ultimate measuring stick. When you have Steph Curry and you have Klay, you have Draymond, and then we add Boogie, how can we evaluate you?
Right, and that is why it's so, like, it's so odd to me, because that is what set Kevin Durant off yesterday. People have been speculating about the Knicks for the last, for really months, but certainly intensely since the Kristaps trade. The reason he came out yesterday and yelled at Ethan Strauss was because Ethan Strauss talked about how since 2017, KD has been frustrated that he's not considered the best player in the world because he miscalculated. He thought I'm better than LeBron, and maybe that's fine. Of course you should think that. The only reason people don't give me credit for that is because I don't have a ring. So let me go win multiple rings in Golden State, then no one could deny it. What he misunderstood was, if he had done that, if we had seen that image the next year in an OKC uniform, people would say he's the best player in the world. It's because he did it on a team that had already won. It's because he had done it with Steph. Now, Steph doesn't seem to care about this stuff.
Yeah.
Steph, to his credit, welcomed him in, didn't care he wasn't going to win any more MVPs, doesn't care about the rankings. This seems to really eat at Durant. He's going to have to go elsewhere. You go and win a title in New York City? If Kevin Durant comes to New York City and wins a championship, I will say he's the best player in the world. I think it'd be pretty damn clear he is.
Just really quickly, who's the best player in the NBA today? Right today.
If I had one player, I'm taking KD.
Okay.
I am taking KD.
Nick?
Giannis and Harden are playing the best. LeBron's still the best player in the world.
We're going to be reminded of that over the next few weeks.
Take a break. Coming up, how much trouble are the Lakers in if they don't
trade? I told you I had a shot on how when we're going to mention LeBron again.
For Anthony Davis. That's next on First.
That was the whole topic.
LeBron ain't the best player today.
He's not playing the best. He's still the best player in the world.
Back here with Chris Mannix. We're talking Anthony Davis. So the NBA trade deadline is at 3 Eastern today. The Lakers are reportedly growing doubtful that they'll actually get a deal done to acquire AD from New Orleans. There has been no counter from the Pelicans after the Lakers basically offered up everyone but LeBron. So Mannix of L.A. doesn't get Anthony Davis. Would that be seen as a failure by Magic Johnson?
It's not all on Magic Johnson, and it's not all on Rob Pelinka. The problems the Lakers are having began, they predated them. Like some of the deals that were made and the picks that were made, the contracts that were doled out, they predated them. The Lakers have actually done a really good job drafting over the years, the last couple of years. I mean, you know, they probably wouldn't be in this position if they drafted Jason Tatum over Lonzo Ball, but their back end of the first round picks, whether it's with Hart or Kuzma, they have been excellent. So they've been good.
They've been good on the number two overall picks of, in order, D'Angelo, Ingram, Lonzo is underwhelming. But the picks
D'Angelo like wasn't Magic, though, right?
Like, no, correct. I thought you meant the organization as a whole. So you mean just this brain trust. But you're right. In the Kuzma part, Zubats looks like a value pick, all that. Go ahead.
No, I mean, that's basically it. Like, it's not... It will be disappointing, but I wouldn't point the finger at Magic Johnson. You had said earlier in the show, though, Nick, that you think the Lakers have done everything. I was talking to somebody over there two nights ago. They really haven't done everything. Everything would be 4 first-round picks and 3 swap rights. That would be everything. Now, you may say that's crazy, but it's kind of what the Nets did in that deal they made with Boston.
Well, the Nets did 3 first-round picks and 2 swap rights.
Okay, but we haven't heard that yet. We haven't heard 3 firsts, and we haven't heard swap rights in any of these discussions yet. Well, so they haven't done everything they could possibly do.
But I'm of the belief that right now the Lakers could offer exactly what you said, and the Pelicans say, okay, thanks, we'll let you know. And then it's going to be after 3 p.m., and it's going to go past. And then I think the Pelicans' strategy is see what the Lakers' absolute maximum offer is. So this summer, if they come back to us, we say it starts there. To find out what they can say, you already offered us this. It would appear to me they have had no intention all along of giving in to Anthony Davis's trade request, and I think they're being cheered on not only by Danny Ainge, who wants to get in on this, but GMs and teams that have no chance of getting in on Anthony Davis that just want the power shifted back from the player to the organization and maybe that don't love the large markets dominating and lording over the small markets.
I would agree with you, and two things here. One, I've been writing for days that I didn't think this trade was going to happen because I know there are people inside the Pelicans organization that want to wait for multiple reasons, for Boston, for the first round picks.
Which are legitimate.
Legitimate reasons. Now, a debatable position is that I'm sure that inside that organization, there are people really upset at the representatives for Anthony Davis. Very upset by it. They don't like how this has all gone down. They completely understood that come July 1st, they were probably going to have to make a deal involving Anthony Davis. He was going to reject their extension, and that would force their hand. But their hand being forced this early, they have put that on the representatives for Anthony Davis, and they're not happy about it at all. So I think there's a strong part of people in – there's a strong position in that organization that Anthony Davis in some ways – is being used as a pawn, is being used as a guy that, you know, all right, it's really LeBron that wants Anthony Davis and not Anthony Davis so much that wants LeBron.
Well, the Pelicans, they need to center their energy on whose fault or who you can blame. And that's on the player. All right? Clutch Sports is working for the player. Anthony Davis, let Clutch Sports know, I want out of this deal. We weren't surprised by that. He's not going to stay with the Pelicans. So because they can't take it out on Anthony Davis, all right? Because they can't do anything to him. They can't say anything to him. And if they do that, it's going to affect other players in the future and how they deal with the Pelicans. So all they can do is take out their frustration, and typically that means blame on Clutch Sports and or the Lakers. It's their fault that the Pelicans haven't put a good team around Anthony Davis.
So explain this to me, though. Explain to me why it is bad for the Pelicans. If Anthony Davis, once this team was as bad as they were, once they were clearly not going to be in the playoffs, and once he knew, I am not going to sign that extension this summer. Why was it bad for the Pelicans to have an extra window? If he doesn't let them know till this summer, they have one window to trade him, which is this summer. It, letting them know, it's not. If this would have come out 2 days after the trade deadline, I was like, well, that's poor form. You're just causing disruption. Why is it bad for the Pelicans to give him a 10-day runway saying, hey, I'm not going to be here this summer if you want to move me now or this summer? Because he has not once said, I demand to be traded by the deadline. He's just saying, I'm not re-signing and I want to be traded. Why is it bad for them to have the information?
That's kind of semantics, like that I want to be traded before the deadline, but I'm saying it. I don't care about the
deadline.
But
he said he's going to play. He's going to play after the deadline. He wants to play after the deadline.
Of course, said all that. It's not a problem that you tell the Pelicans now that you want to be that you want to trade. The problem is you take it public.
Sure.
And you make all this a storyline before, and that has mm-hmm. creased the Pelicans mm-hmm. in their front office. And look, you can make a strong argument that LeBron James needs Anthony Davis more than Anthony Davis needs LeBron James at this point.
Sure.
Because if Anthony Davis, and his people got to know this, and LeBron's people got to know this, if Anthony Davis goes to free agency in 2020, how sure are we he's going to want to sign with the Lakers? Because LeBron James at that point, what, 36?
36.
In that 36th year, what will the Lakers look like? They may not get anybody this summer. The free agency class outside of Anthony Davis in 2020 isn't all that strong. This, to me, is LeBron James needing Anthony Davis and it being orchestrated as such.
So let me ask you a question. We asked you if how much of this falls on Magic Johnson. Does some of this fall on LeBron James then?
No, I don't think it falls on LeBron James, but I think it's naive to think that all this isn't happening with LeBron's knowledge. They share an agent, and I would imagine the strategy about all this is discussed on some level. Now, we can debate what level it's discussed on, but LeBron had to know that when this all came out, even if you're not naming players who are going to be involved in it, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, yeah, Ingram, Kuzma, Ball, all these top-tier young talents.
So this is what I want to know. Should LeBron have put a stop to it? Should LeBron have said to Rich Paul, listen, I know it's conflict of interest, but what your client, who you are generating a lot of money from, essentially paying you a lot of money, what he wants is to come to the Lakers. But that could screw up my thing. Can you imagine, let's say it was a player, not Anthony Davis, and there's a player that wants to get with the Lakers, and we find out that LeBron goes to Rich and says, hey, man, you can't steer him here. It's not what I want. We kill him for that. And so now what seems to be the public perception is that Rich Paul, the agent, you got an agent, right?
I do.
Do you work for him? Oh, he works for you, right? Jenna, you got an agent.
Same.
Did he come to you and be like, Jenna, you're taking this first things first job. Don't give a damn what you think. Or did you come
to
him?
Of course not, yes.
Okay. So Rich Paul, the way it's being perceived is Rich Paul is pulling the strings of 25-year-old, 100-millionaire superstar Anthony Davis. But Rich Paul's strings are being pulled by LeBron James. So it's a three-tier puppeteering led by the small forward of the Los Angeles Lakers, as opposed to Anthony Davis doesn't have agency over himself. Does LeBron James have blackmail info on Anthony Davis? If you don't demand a trade, where am I missing it?
Puppeteering is a bit strong. I mean, I think that the Anthony Davis's representatives and to a degree LeBron, they kind of rolled the dice here mm-hmm. that they could force a trade by going public like this. Here's my problem. Here's my counter to you, Nick. Before all this, we didn't hear a whisper from Anthony Davis wanting out of New Orleans. We didn't hear a grumble, a private sourcing, nothing. We knew going into the offseason that he was probably going to reject that extension because that was his one time to have some power. And we also know, and at least I know, Anthony Davis does not like being the villain. He does not like wearing the black hat. So I don't think it's a stretch to say this strategy was brought to him. And yes, he signed off on it. Ultimately, it falls in his lap. But do you think if he had the same representative he fired before,
Why did he fire that rep?
I think there are a few reasons behind it.
Okay, so when he fired that rep and he had all the agents, every agent in the world would want to rep him, why did he pick Rich Paul? He just didn't know? He didn't know? Like, why are we acting like Anthony Davis is an infant child? Anthony Davis made a decision, a big boy decision. I'm going to go with Rich Paul. I know there's going to be noise that's because I want to get to L.A. Guess what? It's because he wanted to get to L.A. I'm then going to tell Rich Paul to go public with it. Where is the agency of the player?
Go ahead.
I mean, we're not surprised that Anthony Davis told the Pelicans this season. After when they didn't sign Boogie Cousins, they didn't add anyone. They're not competitive this year. Like, we're surprised. So what's best for Anthony Davis? Forget about everybody. Forget Clutch. Forget the Lakers. What's best for Anthony Davis this season? What would have been best for him?
Play out the season.
Are you crazy?
On a bad team, it wouldn't have been best for him to get to the team he wants to sign an extension with now?
Why wouldn't you warn him before to see?
3 months is like, is that like
a playoff run?
Why waste another season?
Yeah, wouldn't it be
best
for
him? I mean, you literally thought it was better for him to stay there, play with the Pelicans, don't say anything, and just open it up this summer.
Well, I mean,
oh, that's better for Boston, but that's not better. We're talking about Anthony Davis.
Agreed. But we're also looking. Look, the Pelicans, when he made this trade request, I think they were like 5 games out of that playoff spot. It wasn't.
Oh, come on. They were in 13th place.
That's not the difference. They're 5 games out of play. It doesn't matter what place they're in. That's how far back they're. It wasn't a Phoenix Suns type of season. They weren't circling the
drain. Okay, but hold on. Let's just pretend for a moment this weird rule that the Kyrie Anthony Davis thing wasn't there. Okay?
Yeah.
And let's just say that the Celtics could trade for him. And he says, you know what? This team's not going anywhere. Boston desperately wants me. I don't want one extra playoff run. I want two. I demand a trade. Would that be the smartest thing for Anthony Davis if he was trying to get to Boston and they were allowed to trade for him? Of course it would.
Yes.
And I understand, and I am as guilty of this as anybody, and you make fun of me, of making the entire NBA world circle around LeBron James. I get it. But the idea that Anthony Davis has been a passive, just passenger on this trajectory, he fired his agent. He hired Rich Paul. He told Rich Paul. Rich Paul did not say, hey, man, LeBron said it's go time. Push the button. Like, you can't do that. He said, go make the trade request. I'm going to tell my teammates. You tell management. And then we're going to go public with it. He is the one that said Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, Knicks. That is Anthony Davis's doing. I got no problem with it. But the idea that we're blaming the agent, who's actually not even in control, it's the player in another city, because LeBron also, by the way, is the one, if we don't know, he's the one giving Magic the trade proposals. He's listing Kuzma and Ingram and Ball. That's on LeBron, too. LeBron's multi-team GM and agent and best player in the world. He got a lot on his plate. I'm not surprised he's a little dinged up.
The going public.
There's a lot going on.
The going public was the biggest mistake. Going public has kickstarted this firestorm. If he had just requested the trade, not gone public, we probably wouldn't be here today.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.